Hello, this is Sueda and Gulbike, the co-founders of Animetrics for The Vegan Report. So today we are introducing Animetrics to you, and we will be talking about why culturally grounded and evidence-based advocacy matters, and we'll also be sharing the key insights about our brand new study, which is on Muslim consumers and how they view animal welfare in halal food production. Please connect with us on our email and social links, which are available in the episode notes. And you can find new episodes every Wednesday on this podcast. Please share this episode with your community as well. And yeah, I would like to start by saying that it is such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for the intro, Sueda. So yeah, I'm Gülbike. We are super excited to share a bit about who we are and some of our recent research. Just to start, so my background is in economics. I did my PhD about how behavior spread between people, like how social influence works and economics of crime. I also work part-time as an assessor for software projects, and I also give lectures on animal rights, welfare, and environmental issues. I do this with Middle East Vegan Society, and in 2.5 years, I have given more than 25 workshops across many countries like Egypt, Turkey, Rwanda, Uganda, Mozambique, Sri Lanka, Philippines, and El Salvador.
And as for me, I'm a behavioral and experimental economist, and currently I am a postdoctoral researcher at the Berlin Social Science Center, where my work is focusing on finding tools to promote pro-social behavior across the society, behaviors such as volunteering, donating, sustainable actions, pro-environmental actions, and so on. And my previous work has been about studying discrimination and biases and how they basically shape people's decision making. And through Animetrics, I am connecting these perspectives with animal advocacy.
Yeah, so Animetrics was born 2 years ago. The idea actually started when we were housemates in Netherlands during our PhD years. It was out of long conversations about how we could contribute to the movement in a more meaningful way. But for that, we were like keeping asking to each other and circling back to one question. So how can we use our skills as economists and academics to make the advocacy more effective?
Yeah, exactly. So we were looking at the animal advocacy movement with our, you know, researcher glasses on, and we noticed that something was missing. So first of all, we know and appreciate that there's a lot of great research out there. But much of this is coming from or focusing on the global north, even though 85% of farmed animals live in the global south or global majority. So that's billions of lives. And the second thing we realize is that in animal advocacy, there are almost no people with advanced training in economics. And this is super important because, you know, the animal advocacy movement, it relies on understanding the behavior of people or the industry and the demand and the supply and how they operate and so on. So, and to be able to make things better for the animals, what we need essentially is behavior change. And economics is the study of exactly that. So we look into how people make decisions, how organizations make decisions, and what sorts of interventions, programs can effectively change those decisions.
Yeah, right. So there's, apart from that, another gap that we saw. So even though these good research exists, it doesn't always reach to advocates, like it doesn't directly answer the most pressing questions. So yeah, even when the data exists, so it should be in a format that's more usable for the advocates. So we want to fill this gap. So we created Animetrics out of this and to work in three areas.
So, well, first of all, it should be obvious by now we conduct research, right? We use economics and behavioral science to answer the most pressing movement-relevant questions. And so we look at how to shift food choices or how to design effective campaigns and so on. And second, we provide implementation support. So what does that mean? This means that we not only publish our findings and tell the advocates in the movement, say, like, here's our findings, do what you got to do with them, but we try to turn them, as Gülbike said, into useful formats, like toolkits, visuals, like short little summaries, so that advocates can actually put them into practice. And this is one of the things that makes us quite unique. So we co-design projects with the advocates from the start. So it's not just our academic curiosity or our own little perspective, but we go to the advocates working in the fields and ask them what they need, what is the most pressing need at the right at that moment, and we focus on that particular question and produce our studies based on these insights.
Yeah, and apart from this, our third program is that we do capacity building. So what does it look like? We train advocates in research design, survey methods, impact evaluation, and so on, in the things that they need help. So our aim is that with this capacity, they can run their own studies or they can use evidence more strategically. So since we launched, we have supported over dozens of organizations from like internationally, from Uganda to Philippines to Kenya, and we have delivered more than 300 of free training.
And in our work, we mostly focus on the global majority or the global south and also the Muslim majority regions. So these areas are critical for animals, but research in these areas and also advocacy in general in these areas are deeply underfunded. And of course, we're doing this and we are telling that as Animetrics, this is our current focus. And we often get this question like, okay, but why do you focus on Muslim communities in particular and what is peculiar about it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that is partly related to our personal background because we both come from Turkey, from Muslim backgrounds, and we have long been aware of how questions of food, faith, or ethics are like integrated in our communities. But when we look at the broader advocacy, animal advocacy space, we notice that Muslim perspectives were almost entirely absent.
And of course, this gap matters because, Muslim consumers make up nearly a quarter of the world's population. We're talking about around 2 billion people here. And halal food systems, they shape a massive share of the global meat and dairy production. So halal consumption is also growing faster than almost any other part of the global food system. So all of this means that if you want to make real global progress for animals, we cannot ignore these particular segments and their specific behaviors and perspectives and so on.
Yeah, exactly. So the halal market is really important and it's projected to keep expanding across Asia, Africa, and even Europe. But the conversations about animal welfare within the system is just beginning. And apart from this, most of the animal advocacy research and messaging is designed for Western audiences. So it doesn't always fit local realities or religious frameworks. So we saw a huge challenge and a huge opportunity, we could say, like to in terms of supporting more faith-sensitive and culturally grounded advocacy. And from this, one example that really shows our approach is our new study we run in Turkey on perspectives on halal food production and animal welfare. So the idea for this project came from a very personal place again, because we grow up in Muslim communities and we often heard people say things like, okay, I eat halal and halal food means that animals were treated well. But that belief, I mean the gap between perception and practice, made us a bit curious to understand more deeply how people think about ethics and what is the relation of animal welfare to halal.
Yeah, we basically think that there's a very strong and comforting belief that halal automatically guarantees animal welfare, right, in these halal food production facilities. But in practice, when we started looking into it, we realized that halal certification focuses primarily on the slaughter methods and processing rules, and it's not necessarily about how animals are raised or treated throughout their lives.
Yeah, and we weren't the only ones noticing this. Advocates working in Muslim-majority regions often told us, like, yeah, we wish we had data to back up conversations about this misconception as well.
Yeah, exactly. So we said, okay, we have this little instinct, and advocates agree with this. So let's go and start designing a study and test this systematically to really understand if there is this gap, how big is this gap, and so on. So we conducted a survey that included around 800 Muslim adults in Turkey, which is a country where halal food is the default for food production. And we were basically after answering two main questions. So question number one is, how much do consumers know about whether certain common and harmful industrial farming practices are allowed under halal food production? Right? Do they know whether or not they're permitted or not? What's their take? And then we also wanted to understand, in case they don't know, if we tell them the truth, the correct information, would this affect their willingness to buy these products or consider switching to plant-based alternatives?
Yeah, so we wanted to understand how consumer knowledge on the some common industrial farming practices, which is currently allowed in halal food production. So we selected six practices, which are one of the most used ones. So these include chick culling, like killing of male chicks, debeaking of chicken, separating cow and calf. Lack of long-term care for injured animals or inadequate space for chickens to move naturally.
And for each practice, we basically gave the participants a definition of the practice, and then we asked them, this practice is allowed in halal food production, true or false? We asked them true false questions. And then if someone answered the question incorrectly, so basically they're all permitted, right? So we wanted to understand if they know this or not. And then if someone said, like, oh, I don't know, or they say that, oh, this is not legal in halal food production, we tell them, hey, this is actually legal in halal production. And then we ask them, knowing this information, would this affect your willingness to buy products who involved this specific practice? And would this affect your intention to switch to plant-based options, basically.
And what we saw, the results were really shocking because all of the six practices we tested, more than half of the participants either didn't know whether those practices were permitted under these halal rules or they incorrectly believed they were forbidden. I mean, even though in reality they're permitted in the halal systems. So in every case, at least one in four people held incorrect beliefs about what halal production actually allows.
Yeah, so like to give a little bit more insight with numbers in it. So nearly half of the respondents, about 47%, believe that in halal certified facilities, it is legally required to provide long-term or medical treatment to animals who are injured or who are no longer quote unquote productive. And this is simply not true, right? There is no such legal requirement currently in Turkey's halal food production system. And similarly, almost the same share, so again, around half of the respondents thought that halal standards guarantee enough space for chicken to express their natural behaviors, right? Like opening their wings, for example. And this is a huge misconception.
Yeah, and what participants were presented with accurate information, their reactions were really important for us because many said that they would be less likely to buy products from these systems using these practices, and a significant number said that they would consider plant-based alternatives instead.
So, what's especially interesting is that these reactions weren't also uniform. So, not everybody reacted in the same way, right? There were certain groups of people, for example, women were way more responsive. Interestingly, older adults were also more responsive to information in terms of like changing their behavior and being more making more pro animal welfare choices, let's say. And also the people who said that animal welfare is a central part of halal, like as part of the belief, they were also more responsive to new information. So we also found that the type of the knowledge gap mattered. So we basically compared people who didn't know whether or not a certain practice was not allowed to people who had incorrect beliefs, so the people who thought that they were forbidden. And the participants who thought a practice was forbidden when it wasn't showed a stronger reaction in response. So it seems that for these groups, learning the truth actually created a sort of moral tension.
Yeah, exactly. So another thing what we found fascinating is that around 70% of our participants said that animal welfare is essential to what halal means to them. So that tells us that for many Muslims, halal isn't just about technical compliance, but it's broader than that. It's not only about the technical side of it, it's a moral framework, so about compassion, stewardship, and avoiding unnecessary harm.
Yeah, so basically, when we showed the participants that some practices are technically allowed, you know, they not always aligned with the halal values in terms of like the faith and the guidelines. And what we think is that, so this is our interpretation of the findings, is that the participants actually experienced what psychologists call the cognitive dissonance, right? That uncomfortable feeling when your values and the facts do not match one another. And that discomfort can actually be a bridge for change, right? So sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, but it is definitely worth exploring in this particular case. Especially when, yeah, the participants said that their intentions would change in reaction to corrected information.
So, what does this mean for advocacy? One takeaway is that value-based framing matters. Because it suggests that if we want to promote plant-forward diets in Muslim communities, it might not be enough only talking about climate or health. Because we have to connect, we also have to connect to religious and ethical values that already motivate people.
And of course, this is not just about Turkey, although we conducted this study there. We believe that similar dynamics likely to exist in other Muslim majority regions and within diaspora communities. So this is why we are currently expanding our work to study how beliefs and the Islamic faith and faith-based perspectives shape behavior within Muslim communities across various regions.
Yeah, definitely. So it's our long-term vision. We want to help build the evidence base for advocates, certifiers, and policymakers.
Yeah, we basically believe that advocacy becomes much more effective when it builds on what people are already caring about. So, understanding the cultural and moral dimension, we believe that it's not just something extra, you know, we bring to the table, but it is actually central to designing effective strategies that connect with people and create shifts in the behavior.
I mean, yeah, definitely. And evidence can guide us. But more importantly, local evidence is our superpower. I mean, because, for example, what works in the US or Europe might backfire in the Middle East or Africa or Asia. So imported strategies often miss the mark. And it's very important to create it together with the advocates who are locally are relevant, like a present there, to have more impact in the region. I mean, we all have the same goals, but we live in different worlds. That's why we have to try keep one foot in each world with more like a better research, but also culturally grounded activism.
And a big part of our mission is also to make sure that our findings, our reports, they just like don't collect dust on shelves, but they actually reach the people who can act on them, who can change their strategies, their campaigns based on this. And this is what our implementation support is about. So we basically help advocates translate research into strategies through workshops that are specifically designed for them, or through outputs like infographics and so on that we specifically create for them to understand and interpret the findings and use them in their daily work.
Yeah, so if you would like to learn more about our work or read our halal welfare study, or if you're an advocate and think that this work can benefit your work in wherever you are, please visit us at animetrics.org. We are always open to collaborations, questions, or just any conversations about evidence and activism.
And thank you so much for listening. And thank you to everyone out there who is trying to make this world a better place for all non-humans, more than humans. Hopefully, we can make sure that every insight, every campaign, and every action brings us closer to a world with less suffering for all beings.